Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at the problems facing Boeing after failures of its Starliner spacecraft have left two astronauts stranded in space. They were supposed to be on the International Space Station for 8 days, but will now be there for at least 8 months. This is the latest in a long line of crises facing the company. So is this one failure too far for Boeing? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you again today. Great as always to have your company on what's going to be a busy programme coming up. Why Europe's car industry appears to be stuck in neutral as the continent's biggest player, Volkswagen, warns it could close plants for the first time in its history. We'll be taking a look under the hood, so to speak, to try and work out what's going wrong. Also today, the boss of one of the world's biggest delivery firms warns of disruption to global trade. And how'd you fancy an AI dating wingman?
They're promising to turn what is messy, enigmatic, unpredictable, unreliable into something that can be operationalized.
Not sure if DHL need to get out and about in the dating scene, but that was the boss of DHL who'll be talking about global trade, of course, a little bit later on. We will, though, have the boss of Wing AI, a fascinating company from the United States that's looking to try and set up a chatbot that helps you with your chat lines. If you think that's something that could help, get in touch with us or anything else you hear throughout the programme. world.business@bbc.co.uk. We're going to start, though, in Germany, where perhaps the biggest warnings yet about the pressure on Europe's car industry have come from one of the continent's biggest firms, Volkswagen. VW, you might know it better as in your country. They've warned that it could close factories for the first time in the company's 80-plus year history as it comes under increasing financial pressure. It's not the only pressure it's under either today. Its former chief executive, Martin Winterkorn, has appeared in court charged with fraud, market manipulation and perjury 9 years after the carmaker was found to have rigged vehicle emissions tests. Plenty then for our international business correspondent, Theo Leggett, to walk us through. Theo, thanks for being with us.
Where do we start?
Yeah, exactly. Let's come to the emissions scandal a little later if we can. But the pressure, this warning from VW, came out of the blue a little bit, right? There's been concerns about tariffs and the shift to electric vehicles, but then suddenly a warning that plants could close. That's more serious than the company had been indicating, right?
It is. Now, problems have been bubbling up for some time. Last year, Volkswagen actually announced a cutback program which was designed to save some 10 billion euros. And the reason it's needed to do this, Will, is because it's facing competition on two fronts. First of all, it makes a lot of money exporting cars to China, upmarket cars, Audis, Porsches, that kind of thing. And the Chinese market for Volkswagen is under pressure. Local producers are taking market share. Back home in Europe, which is already a very crowded market, where, you know, the Volkswagen Group, it comprises brands not just Volkswagen, but also Porsche, Skoda, Seat and Audi, is a very crowded market. And Chinese marks are making increasing inroads into the European market as well, particularly in the market for electric vehicles, which is a sector that Volkswagen has been trying to make its stamp on since 2015. You know, Volkswagen set out to become the dominant player in this market, and now it's facing competition. And the problem is with competition from Chinese brands is that they have lower costs, burnt in lower costs. So their factories in China tend to be more heavily automated than older factories in Europe. There is cheaper labour. And if you believe politicians in Europe, there is substantial subsidy for electric cars in China as well. So those are the kind of pressures that Volkswagen's under. It's been trying to cut costs, but it was trying to do it without cutting jobs or closing factories. It's trying to do it by not replacing people who retired, that kind of thing. Clearly, it hasn't worked and some more radical surgery is needed.
Right. So, yeah, pressure in terms of the money it's having to spend, like all these big car companies across the world really having to spend to innovate. And at the same time, I guess, you know, bad PR on the other side with governments, whether they be European-wide or national governments, setting targets and trying to push us and tax us out of diesel and petrol vehicles.
Absolutely. And the attempt to try and tax us out of diesel and petrol vehicles, that actually played into Volkswagen's hands to a certain extent, because the company has been spending billions on investing in developing new electric cars. But when it comes to cutting costs, Volkswagen is hamstrung to a certain extent. This is not an Anglo-Saxon style company. It's founded very much on German collegiate lines. And what do I mean by that? Well, the supervisory board of Volkswagen is made up 50% of people from the Works Council, which is union representatives. So you have executives and union representatives discussing the fate of the company on a regular basis. And decisions are normally made through collective bargaining and agreement. This is not a company where you would normally see the management in a face-off with the workforce. But that's the kind of situation that we're approaching now, with the threat of potentially a construction plant being shut down, a sort of car manufacturing plant, and a component plant as well. That's what we're hearing.
Theo's staying with us. Let's get a perspective from Germany. Simon Schutz is with us. Simon's the spokesperson for the German Association of the Automotive Industry, the VDA. Simon, thanks very much for being with us on World Business Report.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I suppose the first question, obvious question to ask, is how much of this is about VW? How much of this is industry-wide?
I think this is a very wide mix that is accounting for the whole industry. We have a lot of global development and challenges at the same time, in the middle of the biggest transformation ever. So our company, the German car industry, is taking record investments, especially when it comes to electric mobility. We are on track, but at the same time, Germany, as well as the European Union, have not focused enough on the competitiveness, on attractive conditions for the industry.
By attractive conditions,
there's been a lot of setting goals. It's one thing, but making it possible to reach these goals with benefits for the climate, for the people, as well for the industry and the general welfare, that is what needs to be done. It's not done right now, especially when looking on energy prices, access to raw materials, bureaucracy, focus on regulation. Of course, we have things to do. The industry have things to do. We're working on it with record investments, but politics is questioned here as well.
When you're talking about incentives, do you mean incentives for manufacturers or for people purchasing these vehicles?
No, I'm not talking about incentives at all. I'm talking about general conditions. It's about energy prices that are way different when you look at the US or China. It is about bureaucracy, which is getting more and more. And it's about the general approach of regulating everything. When you look at the US, they have the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA. There are protectionist things that we definitely criticize and see very critical. But at the same time, they do one thing pretty different. They say, this is the goal. And to the companies, they say, however you reach the goal, just make sure you reach it, and we help you to make it possible. Whereas in the European Union, you say, this is the goal, and we tell you with what means you have to look at it, which technologies should be used, and we regulate everything. That's not very attractive for investment. That doesn't really attract businesses. And this is the problem that is getting bigger through all of Europe.
Mm. So what would you like to see change? It sounds like you'd like to see things removed. What would you like to see come out the way, I suppose?
I think the most important thing is that we stop focusing just on symptoms, but really look at the causes of the problems we are facing, so that we really look at what can be done to get the competitiveness going again in Europe. So let's do deals, looking at it, raw materials, or in general, trade deals. There are so many open trade deals on the European agenda. Let's make energy cheaper. I think the European Commission, which is now newly formed, after having been focusing on goals and climate, which is important, they now have to focus on the industry and how the industry can be helped, or how the framework can be built to make the industry reach those goals. This needs to be the focus. This is very important for the welfare. That's also, we need to set an example of how a successful transformation works, so the world, other industries can copy it, because that will be the biggest win for the climate and for the people and for the welfare.
Not a member of the European Commission, the sort of executive of the European Union for those listening outside Europe, but certainly a member of the European Parliament, is Lukas Zieper. He's the leader of the Party for Progress, German party, member of the European Parliament's Transport Committee as well. Lukas joining us from Brussels, normally based out of Cologne in Germany. Lukas, thanks for being with us on the programme.
Oh, it's an honour for me to speak on the BBC.
Well, you've heard the call there from the automotive industry. What did you make of what you heard?
Oh, I understand their struggles, actually. I think one of the biggest problems that we have, especially in Germany, is all the regulation, the bureaucracy. And I think the fact that Volkswagen, who is a company that is inclined
in the
German spirit, do you hear me?
Sorry, Lucas. Yeah, keep going there. Sorry, we've just having a little problem with Simon Schutz's line there.
So what I was about to say, the fact that Volkswagen wants to close down factories in Germany for the first time is a worrying sign. And not only because we have 300,000 workers in Germany who signed a contract with the company due to their works council that these jobs won't be terminated till 2029. So this is one thing that I would like to give Volkswagen to think about, staying true to your promises. But apart from this, that Volkswagen feels the need to take such drastic steps shows us that politics failed on developing a market environment in which companies like that can thrive. And I totally agree that we have to, as we take our companies to higher standards when it comes to environment, workers' rights, etc., we also have to protect them against the cheap competitors from other areas of the world where those standards are not met.
Right. And we've seen, for example, the European Union has put in place or has talked about putting in place tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles entering the market that aren't manufactured in Europe. Do you think this should go further than that? Should it be, I don't know, what, Chinese companies full stop, or should those tariffs be higher?
I think actually, in regard to the standards that we uphold, these tariffs should be higher. Not only because in China, for example, Uyghur people are kept in concentration camps and forced to work in those same car companies, but as spoken about, because the total production cost is lower, and ours is higher not because it's be higher here in general. It's only higher because of our environmental, workers' rights standards, etc., which all of them are right. But if we control this market on our side in this way, we also have to control the market coming from the other side, or else we, shoot in our own foot.
Simon, just give us a quick thought on Simon Schutz, sorry, from the German Association of the Automotive Industry, on employees that Lucas is talking about. I mean, should people working in the sector in Germany be worried? It's been one of the kind of great employers in your country. Should people be nervous?
I think it is a general, signal towards politics. And I think what was just been said about the tariffs is exactly why we have some of these problems, because we are, for example, against these tariffs. Why? Because it is, again, looking at the symptoms. It does not make our attractiveness, our competitiveness any better. Prices won't get cheaper. Energy prices won't get cheaper. Raw materials won't get cheaper or get more access to if we put tariffs on the electric cars from China. So I think it's a mindset thing, you know, that we really have to focus on the competitiveness of the European Union, of Germany, and that is the way to go, because we need to be attractive for investment and for the transformation in general.
Lucas,
and if politics does that, as in the industry goes along, I think people don't have to worry. But if we go on with the current politics, of course it will have its effects on the industry and on certain plans.
Lucas, come back in on that.
I think where I agree on is that we have to get more competitiveness. I think the thing where the car industry maybe is wrong is that we will never be able to be cheaper in regard to our standards. But where I totally agree, this was said before, the bureaucracy is one of the main problems produces costs and makes it difficult for companies to work. So I think if we, this is something where we can agree on, where we have common ground, and as the companies and the politics, they should work on how to make all this bureaucracy smaller, to straighten up the processes, and then I think the companies will have an easier time to attain to the standards that we have in place.
And a quick final thought from you both. I know you're kind of Germany specialists, but is pace now the key for Europe, full stop? Simon first and then Lucas.
Pace is very important. I think China's speed is something we can learn from. Everything has to go quicker. Sometimes I think it's better to just get things done and not regulate everything to the final thought, and then everything or everyone around the world is already further than us. I think we have a great base. We have a great industry. We have great people working it with great ideas and such passion, we can use that, and I think we can build on that.
Lucas?
In any situation where not only one of the most important companies in the history of Germany, but as well as hundreds of thousands of jobs are in danger, pace is the most important thing when you go on solving the problem.
Thanks both for your time. Simon Schütz there, spokesperson for the German automotive industry, and Lukas Sieper, the leader of the Party for Progress German party in the European Parliament, also a member of the European Parliament's Transport Committee. Theo, a lot in there.
A lot in there. And I think you have to remember when you're talking about this as well that Volkswagen alone accounts for 300,000 jobs in Germany and roughly the same amount outside Germany as well. So hugely important company.
And Fiona Sincotta, who's with us, senior market analyst at City Index. Fiona, great to have you with us.
Hi.
From a stock market perspective, this isn't just about Europe, is it? We saw last week, didn't we, and over the last couple of weeks, a lot of the big North American automakers talking about exactly this headache too.
Yeah, completely. I mean, this is something that we're seeing across the board. And even more broadly, I mean, if we're talking sort of about manufacturing more broadly and that industry, we've seen a downturn, a contraction in the sector in Germany specifically. It's very deep, also in the Eurozone. But there was also data out today, again, in the US, showing that the manufacturing PMI data there shows a contraction for a fifth straight month as well. So, you know, I think just broadly more broadening that sector out to manufacturing, it is showing a deep contraction.
Theo, before we let you go, we also had this today in a court in Germany. That's the boss, the former boss of Volkswagen company we've been talking about, Martin Winterkorn, arriving in court in Braunschweig. Theo, to answer questions about...
To answer questions about one of the biggest scandals ever to hit corporate Germany, Will. Now, this goes back to 2015 when it emerged that Volkswagen had systematically been manipulating official emissions checks on cars in the United States. It had been on a drive to improve sales in the US. And it was selling diesel cars and marketing them as clean diesels. But unfortunately, the cars were not terribly clean. And the only way the company was able to both pass the very stringent US emissions tests and allow its cars to have high performance and be reliable was by installing a software device known as a defeat device that turned on emissions controls when the car was in the laboratory being tested and turned them off when it was out on the open road. So the cars were passing the tests, but they were also polluting. This gimmick worked a treat until it came to light, Will. And then it triggered off, as I say, a huge scandal. And we're still seeing the effects of that scandal today. The drive towards electric cars was, if not sparked off by this scandal, at the very least accelerated by it.
Yeah, and that case is going to continue. Plenty of other defendants in there, but Mr. Winterkorn can face up to 10 years in prison if he is found guilty.
On charges of fraud, market manipulation and perjury, which he denies, Will.
I'm sure we'll get Theo back on throughout the trial there. Theo Leggett, our international business correspondent, bringing us up to date on that, the beginning of that VW trial. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service.
I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at the problems facing Boeing after failures of its Starliner spacecraft have left two astronauts stranded in space. They were supposed to be on the International Space Station for 8 days, but will now be there for at least 8 months. This is the latest in a long line of crises facing the company. So is this one failure too far for Boeing? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, you might have noticed we've covered from the stories we've covered so far, plenty of German companies having a bit of a rough time. And as some of our guests were already outlining, that's a little bit to do with what's going on in the sluggish nature of the German economy. DHL isn't just one of Germany's biggest firms, though. It's one of the world's biggest logistics firms. And in an exclusive interview with the World Service, the group CEO, Tobias Meyer, gave some stark warnings about the challenges facing global trade and the German economy. My colleague, Leanna Byrne, asked him how tariffs and trade barriers are affecting the flow of goods and demand globally.
We see a profound change in patterns of trade. It is not, as many people say, that see a strong deglobalization. China's trade with the rest of the world is still growing heavily. Some people in the West don't fully notice, but it is happening.
So you're not necessarily seeing policies of protectionism hurting global trade and logistics as much as perhaps we might talk about in the news?
Well, we do see that it has an impact and that it makes some supply chains also more costly. Trade barriers drive inflation.
I want to ask you about the German economy, because obviously you're one of the largest businesses in Germany as well. Germany's really facing a drop in industrial investment. How does that play out in DHL's business? What do you notice?
So we do see that, unfortunately, that German exports have been relatively weak in terms of volume, especially also into the European neighbors. That is something that is not for our business, especially our express business, which carries a lot of high-value goods, spare parts, you know, industrial machinery and the like. So it is visible and it is, you know, not as we like it to see it. We would have hoped for a stronger recovery during this year as it relates to this specific aspect. On the consumer side, we are mainly seeing this through our parcel delivery business, but also the mail side has some elements where you get an indication, advertisement mail, for instance, how bullish people are. There it is on and off.
I mean, the German government has been criticized for not being really agile enough and responding to economic challenges, particularly in the industrial sector. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes and no. First of all, I think we need to be careful in blaming politicians too much. You know, these are folks that we elected as the people. And in Germany, we choose to elect a very fragmented parliament. And we don't have a majority vote as you have it in the UK or in the US. We vote for parties. And the more parties are represented in the Bundestag, the federal parliament, the more difficult it is to form a government. Now, could certain things have been decided quicker and better? Definitely so. But I think the context and difficulty, the structural difficulty to govern across such a broad coalition is the root cause of why we are having a lot of discussions in this country.
Do you think the rest of 2024 is going to be a better outlook?
Generally, I see currently, you know, cautiously optimistic, I would say, because we do see, you know, slight indications, especially outside of Europe.
Tobias Meyer, the boss of DHL, speaking to Liana Byrne there, Fiona Sincotta of City Index with us. The problem is, Fiona, you can say, don't blame the politicians too much. We're seeing stocks slipping around a little bit again today. And a lot of that is to do with certainly political posturing and political decisions, potentially.
Yes, that's right. You know, we've seen a strong sell-off today in the stock market, especially in the US. And I think we were expecting, typically speaking, September is a weak month for stocks, especially when we're heading towards a US presidential election as well.
Yeah, and one that's been quite tense and talked about globalization a lot, hasn't it? To the point, in fact, that we were talking about earlier with EVs. China's BYD just coming down the wires. The biggest manufacturer of electric vehicles saying it's going to pause its Mexico plant decisions until after that election. So you can see how that's impacting stocks and shares already. Fiona, I want to get your views on this because these have been interesting stock market companies recently, dating apps. We've heard from a few of them. Match Group, the one that owns Match.com, Plenty of Fish, Tinder, has also been reporting sort of slowing down in its revenues, hasn't it, recently, as people move away from these apps?
Yeah, which is really interesting, isn't it? You know, because there was very much a time when this was the way that sort of, you know, particularly Gen Z was moving forwards with their dating and connecting with people. But it does seem that there is a slight backlash to it and there is slight sort of new trends that are forming.
Well, if that is fizzling out, then the way to try and reignite the fires apparently is, yep, you guessed it, AI seems to be the buzz phrase in everything in business at the moment. But the biggest players, Tinder, Hinge, Bumble, Grindr, all testing AI tools and chatbots to do everything from generate icebreakers to build profiles to provide feedback on your users' flirting. Carolina Bandinelli is an associate professor at the University of Warwick in the UK and researches digital love.
Digital technologies in general and now AI, they're promising to turn what is messy, enigmatic, unpredictable, unreliable into a simple procedure, sort of a new utopia of what I call the post-romantic love, love that is turned into an efficient matchmaking. And AI is like this on steroids. So it's saying, look, we can do things on your behalf, can think of things to write and say on your behalf. And I don't think that that this will really make things simpler.
Well, one man trying to make love a little messier, a little neater is Tyler Henkel. Speaking to us from Florida, he runs an app called Wing AI, helps people improve their dating. Tyler, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
How's it work?
So somebody would upload a picture of a profile or a conversation that they're having, and our app, Wing AI, would come up with a message or an icebreaker that helps them move the conversation forward.
Right. So what, you bring up the app of the person that you want to match with, and it generates something that it thinks that person will find, what, funny or whatever?
Yeah. So it gives them ideas. So we've kind of found the secret sauce kind of what works, what people respond to on these dating apps. And we've distilled that into our AI. So it helps come up with responses that give our users a good idea where they can take the conversation, what might be funny. And it really helps them in the creative process to figure out something they can
without say. Busting your business model, tell us a bit of what that secret sauce is.
So it's actually just training it on a lot of the good examples, good conversations. We found there's certain texting styles that work well, and certain, you know, kinds of senses of humor and things like that that we instill into our algorithm. So just training with the right kind of data, I think that's the key right there.
Is that the best way to start a relationship?
So for the way we look at it, it's a way of helping people come up with things that are going to just get the conversation rolling, and then they take over the conversation themselves. So
right, and it's really, based off their data, right? It's kind of scraping their profile.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of you select a voice that really fits your style more. So it's something that you kind of you feel matches you, and in doing so, you can then also like work with it. It's like having a friend who's helping you out, who's giving you suggestions.
And you think it re-energizes these apps potentially?
Definitely, because we've been talking to a lot of people that have been really frustrated with online dating and haven't been seeing good results from it. And so when people can try out an app that gives them suggestions, helps them actually get results where they're actually able to go on dates and things like that, they have a much better experience and they get closer to finding somebody that would be right for them.
Surely if it's too successful, though, they're just going to keep, I don't know, reusing it, trying to meet different people.
Well, the funny thing is we find that most of our users, once they get they go on a date with somebody, they don't really need the app that much. So I mean, it's not right. The best thing for our business model when they stop using the app, but that's really our goal, is to get them on the date, get them to have a relationship.
Could you have done with it? I feel like it could have helped me out.
Yeah, no, I've tried it, and it's definitely helped me at times in the past.
Well, and when's it going to be in apps?
It's out on the App Store right now. Just look up Wing AI.
Well, there we go.
On iOS and Android.
Tyler Henkel in Florida, who runs Wing AI, and Fiona Sincotta of City Index. Thanks so much for your time. And thanks to you for listening to World Business Report.
I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast, where we're looking at the problems facing Boeing after failures of its Starliner spacecraft have left two astronauts stranded in space. They were supposed to be on the International Space Station for 8 days, but will now be there for at least 8 months. This is the latest in a long line of crises facing the company. So is this one failure too far for Boeing? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.